Well, hello and welcome back to the Archaeology News Weekly. I am, as ever, your host, David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now the main headlines from around the world are as follows. A rock shelter provides rare proof of early inhabitants of Ohio in the USA, while we now learn that dogs were first tamed in China, sadly to be food. It seems that new evidence shows Europe's first farmers replaced their predecessors, though we're still missing a link. 3,700-year-old fortifications are uncovered in Israel on a controversial excavation site, while, just as controversial, we report on breaking news about Europe's oldest axes, some 900,000 years old. A more leisurely pursuit can be found on Iron Age History Day on the North York Moors. And in Ireland, the debate rages over Braemar Port's threat to Irish passage tombs. The reconstruction of a Scottish Bronze Age boat proves its worth for volunteers to take to Loch Tay. And down in southern England, the Kent's cavern dig uncovers a 15,000-year-old javelin point. Finally, there's a £150,000 boost for the Wiltshire Heritage Museum to display the Bronze Age. More than 10,000 years ago, an Ice Age hunter stopped to change a broken spear point beneath a rock overhang in what is now northwestern Coshocton County in Ohio. A volunteer working with the Ashland University professor found the broken point last month with the distinctive vertical grooves or flutes at its base. That means it is far older than most arrowheads and spear points found in Ohio. It's rare proof that Paleo Indians, who hunted mastodons in Ohio during the last ice age, were in this area. Bradley Lepper, an archaeologist with the Ohio Historical Society, helped identify the point and confirmed it was a very important find, because most fluted points are found in fields. But this one was found in context, in a layer in which it was deposited. This is one of the very few cases in Ohio in which we can say it was here and exactly here that this item was dropped 11,000 years ago. The flint came from Flint Ridge near Newark, and the point is similar to the style first found in Ontario in Canada called the Crowfield Point. The team is now working to recover carbon fragments from the layer where the point was found so that it can be dated precisely. Wolves were domesticated no more than 16,300 years ago in southern China. A new genetic analysis suggests, and it is possible the canines were tamed to be livestock, not pets, the study author speculates. In this region, even today, eating dog is a big cultural thing, noted the study co-author Peter Savolainen, a biologist at the Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm, Sweden. And you can also see in historical records, as far back as you can go, that eating dogs has been a common process in East Asia. Therefore, you have to think of the possibility that there was more than one reason for the domestication of dogs. The new work bolsters the long-held theory that dogs first became man's best friend in East Asia. That notion came under fire last month based upon DNA analysis of so-called village dogs in Africa, as we reported earlier. The highest level of genetic diversity in modern dogs should exist in the region where the animals first came under human control, but the August study found that African village dogs have a similar amount of genetic diversity as those in East Asia, calling into question the origins of dog domestication. The new work, Savolainen and colleagues analysed the entire mitochondrial genome DNA of 169 dogs, as well as portions of the genomes from 1,543 dogs across Europe, the Middle East and Asia. These dogs all share at least 80% of their DNA, the team found. The animals' genetic diversity increased the further east the scientists looked. The greatest diversity was found in a region south of the Yangtze River in China. According to the team, the data now makes it totally clear that genetic variation in East Asian dogs is much higher than anywhere else in the world. The analysis also suggests that wolves were domesticated from several hundred individuals sometime between 5,400 and 16,300 years ago. This is just around the time that the Asian hunter-gatherers were adopting a more settled agrarian lifestyle, which is part of what makes Savolainen think that the canines might have been kept as food. Adam Boyko, a biologist at Cornell University in New York and co-author of the August study, agrees that the new work shows greater genetic diversity in East Asia than Africa, but said he would like to see more genetic evidence before he calls the findings proof of domestication. I could actually be seeing some agreement between the scientists there. You heard it here first. Analysis of ancient DNA from skeletons suggests that Europe's first farmers were not the descendants of people who settled the area after the retreat of the ice sheets. Instead, the early farmers probably migrated into major areas of Central and Eastern Europe around 7,500 years ago, bringing domesticated plants and animals with them. Barbara Bramante and colleagues from Mainz University and elsewhere analysed DNA from hunter-gatherer and early farmer burials and then compared them both to each other and to DNA from modern Europeans. They conclude that there's very little evidence of direct genetic link between the hunter-gatherers and the early farmers, and 82% of the types of mitochondrial DNA found in the hunter-gatherers is relatively rare in Central Europeans today. For more than a century, scientists have argued about who the ancestors of Europeans living today actually were. We know that people lived in Europe before and after the last big ice age and managed to survive by hunting and gathering. We also know that farming spread into Europe from the Near East over the last 9,000 years. But the extent to which modern Europeans descended from either of those two groups has eluded scientists, despite many attempts to answer this question. Now, the team from Mainz University, together with researchers from UCL and Cambridge in England, have found that the first farmers in Central and Northern Europe could not have been the descendants of the hunter-gatherers that came before them. And what's even more surprising, they also found that modern Europeans couldn't solely be the descendants of either the hunter-gatherers alone or the first farmers alone, and are unlikely to be a mixture of just those two groups. For the first time, we're now able to directly compare the genes of the Stone Age Europeans, and what we find is that some DNA types just aren't there, despite being very common in Europeans today. After the end of the Ice Age, some 11,000 years ago, the hunter-gatherer lifestyle survived for a couple of thousand years, but was then gradually replaced by agriculture. The question was whether this change in lifestyle from hunter-gatherer to farmer was brought to Europe by new people, or whether only the idea of farming spread. The study now identifies the Carpathian Basin as the origins of early Central European farmers. It seems that the farmers of the Linear Band Karamik culture immigrated from what is now modern-day Hungary around 7,500 years ago into Central Europe, initially without mixing with local hunter-gatherers. This is surprising because there was cultural contact between the locals and the immigrants, but it appears there was no, and this is a polite way of putting it, genetic exchange of women. The new study confirms what Joachim Berger's team showed in 2005, that the first farmers were not the direct ancestors of modern Europeans. Berger makes it clear that we're all still searching for the remaining components of modern European ancestry. European hunter-gatherers and early farmers alone are not enough. But new ancient DNA data from later periods in European prehistory may shed light upon this in the future. Just as long as nobody suggests that we're all Atlanteans or aliens, I'll be happy. Israeli archaeologists say they've uncovered the oldest example of massive fortifications ever found in Jerusalem. The Israeli Antiquities Authority say that the 3,700-year-old wall was built by the Canaanites as a protected passageway from a hilltop fortress to a spring. Excavation director Ronnie Reich says that for the first time such a significant construction has been discovered from before the monumental building projects of King Herod 2,000 years ago. The 26-foot-high wall is part of the fortifications that archaeologists believe protected the city's Canaanite residents from marauders. Reich said that Wednesday a 79-foot section of the wall had been uncovered and more likely remains unhidden. Hidden? The Canaanite walls, the archaeologists discovered, are about 2 meters apart and rise to the height of 8 meters, or 26 feet in some places, and are made of gigantic stones, some 3 to 4 meters thick. Excavators say this is only one third of the possible original length. The walls have been dated by pottery to the Middle Bronze Age, which is better known in Israel as the period of the patriarchs. At that time, Jerusalem was a kind of city-state, a fortress surrounded by farming plots. The massive nature of the fortifications have convinced archaeologists that the city was apparently larger and stronger than they had previously believed. Critics, though, say that Israel's use of such projects as political tools to bolster Jewish claims to occupy Palestinian land are real. Excavations at the site known as the City of David are in a Palestinian neighbourhood just outside the walls of Jerusalem's old city. You can read about this actually in issue 2 of Past Horizons on page 8. It's a fascinating insight into archaeology and politics in this area. So if you go along to pasthorizons.com, click on magazine and go to, as I said, issue 2. Page 8. Archaeologists have long been puzzled by a million-year pause between when early humans started making sophisticated hand axes with two-faced blades in Africa 1.5 million years ago, and when the technology finally got to Europe. But new research is showing that advanced Stone Age tools got to Europe close to the time they reached other sites outside of Africa. In a letter published in the journal Nature, two archaeologists have shown that axes from southeastern Spain are dated to 900,000 years ago, much older than had previously been believed possible. This could only mean that it only took, and I say only took, 600,000 years for the new axe-making techniques to get to Europe. What was surprising was that older axes hadn't been found before in Europe. This was from the archaeologist Louis Gilbert, a co-author of the letter. Rick Potts, director of a human origins program at the Smithsonian Institution's National Museum of Natural History in Washington, says the work is credible. If you asked him yesterday where were the earliest hand axes in Europe, he would have said, well, we have an excellent site in England called Boxgrove from around 500,000 years ago. The new research, though, has almost doubled that time period from 500,000 to 900,000 years ago. Gilbert and fellow author Gary Scott are at the Berkeley Geochronology Center in California that studies the history of the Earth and dating methods. They used analysis of changes in the Earth's magnetic fields to date the axes. Very fine-grained magnetic materials in the rock will orientate themselves with the current magnetic field, making it possible to measure exactly which era a given item came from by dating the polarity of the Earth's magnetic field at the time. In addition to paleomagnetic technique, Gilbert reports that a record in rock layers of the remains of micromammals such as rodents, developed by Walker's team at Estrecho de Cuapar, was crucial in confirming the dates. The Solana de Zamborino caves haven't been studied in more than 30 years. Stone axes called Acheulean by archaeologists were the Swiss Army knife of the Stone Age. Hand axes date to roughly 1.7 million years ago in eastern Africa, and age estimates of 1.2 million years to 800,000 years ago for hand axes from two Israeli sites indicate that the tool-making style spread out of Africa long before the origin of Homo sapiens, around 200,000 years ago. Homo neanderthalis, Homo erectus and Homo heidelbergensis are all species known to be associated with Acheulean axes, which have two-sided cutting faces that were made from many types of stone for still unconfirmed uses. They began to be replaced by a smaller, more mobile kit of specialized stone tools around 400,000 years ago. Perhaps even more interestingly than the previous gap in the arrival of the hand axe technology is why the hand axes weren't more popular outside Africa. Common at sites in Africa, the hand axes are much rarer in Europe and Asia. If this was such a revolutionary, wonderful new technology, just why were they not used more widely? The older dates for the Spanish axes are now expected to generate new studies at other European rock shelters bearing Acheulean artifacts. But these studies may be hampered by the lack of appropriate sediments from which to identify paleomagnetic polarity reversals. Visitors to the North York Moors National Park in England can travel back in time, though I have to say not 1.2 million years, to the Iron Age on a special themed weekend. The National Park has several important Iron Age sites, including hill forts based at Boltby Scar and Rolleston Scar. The park is running a 5-year, £500,000 Lyman Ice project to examine the history of the period and to carry out excavations. Visitors can view the excavations for free over the weekend of September the 12th to the 13th with guided walks at Boltby Scar near Thirsk. They're led by Landscape Research Centre and places are limited, so you'll have to book, and the number is as follows. You got your pen ready there? It's 01439 772738. I'll give you that again. It's 01439 772738. There is a series of events for youngsters at the Sutton Bank Visitor Centre over the weekend as well. Iron Age reenactors will be giving food and cooking displays and talking about weaponry from the period. There will be Iron Age textiles and jewellery on show, and children can also take part in a special dig at the centre. People can keep up to date with progress at the dig at Boltby Scar at www.boltbyscar.wordpress.com. Places are still available for anyone wanting to get involved in the archaeological dig at the site itself. So places are on offer and full training will be given. You can get details from Nick Lishman on, are you ready again? I hope you've still got your pen, 01439 770657. That was 01439 770657. Or you can email him as well. If you go to the Stone Pages website, you'll be able to get his email. Just talking about next weekend, actually. Next weekend in Britain and Europe is quite an exciting time. It's the Heritage Days up here in Scotland. We're having Doors Open Day. And, of course, we've got Scottish Archaeology Month. Just type Scottish Archaeology Month into Google and you'll see a wealth of things that you can get involved in over the whole of September. If you want to see myself, well, you can actually do that next weekend at a place called Old Pentland Kirkyard. That's near IKEA, near Edinburgh. And you can also find me again hiding in a woodland again near Edinburgh at a site called Cowsland on the, I think now, check my diary, that'll be the 19th, where I'll be working with the Edinburgh Archaeological Field Society as well. Anyway, let us continue. Some may remember the fuss about this development earlier this year. Well, controversy continues in Ireland. The National Trust for Ireland has warned that the proposed deep water port at Bray Moor, north of County Dublin, could threaten an archaeological complex of passage tombs even older than Newgrange, Nowth and Douth in the Boyne Valley. The Environmental Trust was commenting on plans by Drogheda Port to extend its boundary southwards so as to incorporate Bray Moor for development of the Deepwater Port. Archaeologist Dr. Mark Clinton, the chairman of the National Trust for Ireland's National Monuments and Antiquities Committee, said one mound had an entrance orientation indicating the possibility that it was aligned with the summer solstice. In this regard, and given the morphology and geographical location, there's every possibility the builders were the near ancestors of those that built the nearby world-acclaimed Boyne Valley tombs. Dr. Clinton said the two cemetery complexes proposed to be incorporated by Drogheda Port under the 2009 Harbours Act must be considered within the greater context of the other passage tombs nearby. Hence, we believe it is far more appropriate that the World Heritage Site would be extended to include the Bray Moor Gormanston complexes rather than their obliteration as a result of an extension for the development of Drogheda Ports. Notice of the Bray Moor extension plan is available for public inspection at the Superintendent's office at Drogheda Garda Station. Deadline for submissions and objections is September the 8th, so you've got 2 days left. All submissions should be sent to Garrett Duchy, Maritime Transport Division, Department of Transport, Dublin 2. You can also email them at Garrett Ducey. I'll just spell that properly for you. It is garrett.doocey@transport.ie. You can also actually just type in Bray Moor extension plan into Google. This one, I think, is going to be another one of these Taras. The Bronze Age lived on at Loch Tay in Perthshire, Scotland, as a replica of a 3,000-year-old logboat successfully completed its maiden voyage. A team of more than 30 volunteers worked for 3 weeks to make the boat, modelled on a prehistoric vessel discovered in the Tay estuary in 2001. 6 people were given the chance to paddle the craft as it made the short trip to the Scottish Crannog Centre near Aberfeldy from a nearby picnic site. The volunteers were tasked with creating the 9-metre-long boat from a single Douglas fir, using replicas of Bronze Age tools alongside their modern equivalents. The actual Bronze Age tools were found out to be a third as efficient as the modern ones. The work was overseen by Damien Goodburn of the Museum of London, a veteran of Channel 4's Time Team and one of Britain's leading authorities on ancient woodwork. Further expertise was provided by the Crannog Centre's Barry Andrian. The so-called Carpole logboat, on which the replica was modelled, was discovered in the Tay estuary by amateur metal detectorists in 2001. The boat was recovered from the water in 2006 and is currently undergoing conservation work at the National Museum of Scotland in Edinburgh. Archaeologists are unclear as to how the Carpole logboat met its demise, but the modern copy crossed the loch in a little over 5 minutes, despite difficult conditions, without any problems. The logboat is going to be added to the collection at the Crannog Centre and visitors will be able to see it. Finally, and after about 3 years of these podcast news, a reconstructed ancient boat story with a happy, non-sinking ending. And by the way, the Tay Crannog Centre is well worth a visit. Well worth it. Archaeologists digging at Kent's Cavern in Devon, England, have found a 15,000-year-old weapon carved from a reindeer antler. The rare javelin point was crafted by Stone Age inhabitants of the caves and is the only complete example of its kind ever found in the UK. The find was made on the first day of an archaeological dig, aiming to find evidence of Neanderthal or early human occupation at the caves. The caves are the oldest known dwellings in the UK, but there's not been a major dig on the site for more than 80 years. Archaeologists are hoping to learn more about the origins of Kent's Cavern's use as a human shelter and establish firm dates for the first occupation of the cave by Neanderthals and early members of our own species. The dig will continue until September the 10th and can be viewed as part of the cavern tour. And finally, grants for construction and refurbishment work at 34 museums throughout the UK have been announced by Culture Minister Barbara Follett. The £4 million worth of grants include £150,000 for the Wiltshire Heritage Museum in Devizes. The grant will be used to create a new Bronze Age gallery to house material excavated from the heart of the Stonehenge World Heritage Site. The new gallery will feature Britain's richest Bronze Age burial, found at Bushbarrow near Stonehenge. The finds from the burial have been described as Britain's first crown jewels. The gold finds will be on permanent display in Wiltshire for the first time in generations. The museum is home to the best Bronze Age collections in Britain, and the new displays will be at the heart of a revitalised museum, which will also feature a lift to enable access to all the museum displays. The new gallery will be developed in collaboration with the planned new Stonehenge Visitor Centre. Well, if only they could find more money for the Pete Moore Centre as well in Somerset, which is set to be closed due to lack of funding, despite local and national protest. Think on. And thinking on, can I actually say there's the Preservation Today Network has revamped itself and is even better than ever. I highly recommend that you get along to voicesofthepast.org. That was voicesofthepast.org. And have a little browse around there. There is some amazing information to be had. Wanting some adventure as well? Well, why not get along to Past Horizons as well? Pasthorizons.com, where you can either choose from the magazine, the videos, or search for projects to test your mettle as an archaeologist. Can I also remind people that there's the new Badger site, the Badger Federation, www.badgerfed.co.uk, that's badgerfed.co.uk, and more can always be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. You also might have noticed that we've been playing about with the music over the last few weeks, and hopefully next week we will be asking you, yes, you the listener, to decide what we should do. Are you happy with the new music? Did you like it the way it was before? Or do you have an idea of what we should be using? Anyway, thank you so much for listening to this week's Archaeology News. We hope you'll return again to us next week.